So I'm going to call the meeting to order at 6 o'clock of the Board of Trustees work session on February 20th, 2024. Just like to introduce our staff that we have here. It's so nice to see you all. It's been a while. We did introductions last month of our new people, Teresa and Commissioner Bobby. So, and we're still missing Laura as another new person that we have. And then we'll get to Melissa in just a little bit, who is one of our speakers today. I would like to change the order of the agenda here and move Melissa up after we do the introductions. So she'd be number two from number six, and so that she can leave a little bit earlier. So if we could introduce our staff, that would be great. You want to start with Amy?
Do you have the mic?
Oh.
Might have to turn it on.
I'm Amy Anderson. I'm the Associate Director of Accounting for Great River. I've been with the organization since 2020, and I work here at the St. Cloud Building.
I'm Jeanette Burkhart. I am a Patron Services Supervisor for the Southern Branches of our region. I've been with Great River for 17 years. That's all.
Nicole Wojcik, the Associate Director of Human Resources, and I've been with Great River for 2 months and, 7 days or something. Like
that. And we're so glad you're here. I'm Brandy Cantor, Lead Patron Services Supervisor, almost my 23rd anniversary, so I've been here a while.
And I am Brianne Fruth. I'm the Communications and Development Coordinator, and I have been here 5.5 years.
Oh, already. Great, yeah. Thank you. So with that, we'll have Melissa do her talk, Melissa Brecken from CMLE, Central Minnesota's Library Exchange. We've talked about that many times. I've given some pretty nasty reports, but things are really looking up mainly because of Melissa, so I'll let Melissa.
Well, my name is Melissa Bershon, and I have been with CMLE for 8 months. I was hired as an interim executive director. My background is public libraries. I have been in public libraries in Minnesota for many, many years and retired out of Carver County. I was a library director there, and I've been a public library administrator for all those years. And I seem to have felt a need within Minnesota because once I retired, other people started either leaving or going on. So I filled a number of interim positions. I've been at Stillwater Public Library when they were hiring their director. I was at Gichigami while they were hiring their director. I was at Metronet when they were hiring their director, and here I am at CMLE. I was hired with the express purpose, and there was a lot of things going on before I came in, but what essentially happened is CMLE ended up without a home where they were officed. The landlord said, we need you to be out, and the two regional directors, Karen and Carla, emptied out all of this, the paperwork and the computers and everything, and it ended up at East Central. And right now, that's where I'm housed. We have a contract with East Central Regional Library. I have a QB there. They help me with the technology, and that's where our finances are done. That's a year contract, as well as I'm with a year contract that will end in June. Now, we'll see how it goes. So, what my mission was, or my goal when they hired me, was with the idea of doing a strategic plan, maybe hiring someone, getting everything in order. And what ended up happening is we had a major audit, and this audit took a long, long time to do. And I kind of pushed back a little bit on the strategic plan because we know who our members are, but we don't have a membership list. So when I called the former director of CMLE and said, who are our members? She said, everyone. Well, we have 12 counties, and we have over 300 public schools, and we have historical societies, and the public libraries are easy because we've got East Central and Great River. But the rest of it was really hard. So we're trying to get that in order. And to find out who our members are, if they are indeed everyone, which they should be, and also then look to the future. So I've been working the last few months on probably 5 or 6 options of what I can bring to the CMLE board in March of saying, this is what I would recommend for you to go forward. We are a state statute through the legislature. There's no way we're going to go away. We're here. And we're over the 12 counties. We're between Great River and East Central. It's really hard because we've got two joint powers, library agencies, and in some of the other parts of the state, that doesn't happen. And they can incorporate the multi-type in, such as Arrowhead or Travis to Sioux or Selco Sells. But here, it's not been able to happen that way. So that's where we're at. We're moving forward. We have started giving grants away to staff, and we're really excited about that. In this legislative session, the $175,000 budget that was CMLE's was raised to $269,000, I think it is now, $269,000, which was a little bit of an increase. It's not a lot, but it's something. And we have about $93,000 that we're offering to staff in all the libraries, in school library media centers, historical societies. The Friends of the Library have requested some grants. So we're able to do that. We have a grant committee, and we want to be able to give as much of this money away as possible by June, because we don't want the state looking at it and saying, oh, we'll take that back from you if you can't spend it. We can spend it. So that's what we're doing right now is working through these grants and with the idea of moving forward. So are you shaking your head? Are you going to go?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So that's kind of where we're at. I don't know if I've forgotten anything to say that you want me to say, or if you have any questions for me. The multi-types are really difficult organizations, I have to say. I was around when they were started as a baby librarian. And when they were started, there were our whole libraries were a lot different than they are today. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of changes, and the multi-types have been struggling to adapt to some of those changes, and I'm hoping within the next few years they start changing their language. For instance, when the multi-types were started, many of the schools needed circulation systems, and some of the multi-types do help run circulation systems in some of the school libraries. We don't happen to do that, because it's just not a mechanism that would happen. There's also delivery. And Minitex, which is a statewide organization, takes care of our delivery. So there's none of that. So it's been a change. You know, libraries are changing. Multi-types need to start changing, too. So I'm hoping as we go along, on top of our 269, I should tell you that the legislature awarded the 7 of us. There are 7 multi-types in the state. The 7 of us, $1 million to spend within a year. Now, since that time, we've been able to extend that time, and with the purpose of it going to increasing the number of licensed school library media specialists. So right now, what's happening within the state, we took an appropriation of that $1 million, and we're doing a survey of every school district within the state, talking to business managers, talking to school superintendent, talking to licensed media specialists to see who's out there now. It's really been a profession that's been in trouble for a long time, because what happened when the schools start running out of money, they pull those media specialists and put them in the classroom because they are master's degree librarians. And so what happens then, if they even have a school library anymore, many of the school libraries could be run by parents or volunteers. I know I met with someone in Taylor's Falls, and there's one person that manages five libraries. So she goes between the five libraries. So we're going to find out with that census who's out there and what the need is. So there we are. We've got $1 million in the pot for seven of us to spend, and that's been really an interesting thing. But this census, I think, is going to be very important to us so we can find out what's going on out there and where the need is. So,
can you talk about locations where we're kind of looking to, besides having Karen and Carla run the program, joint powers?
Oh, yes, the options? You
know, right.
Okay, I started with option of talking to East Central and Great River, since they're, what are you?
We have to govern you by statute.
Yeah, by statute. Could we do a joint powers agreement with the two of them?
So a joint powers agreement between two joint powers.
Between two joint powers agreements. And we just don't know how that would work.
It could be done.
You know, could you do that? We don't know. And, you know, we thought there were some other options. Okay. I've looked to St. Cloud State University, and we have talked to them. At the time when all of this kind of fell apart, the board was talking to them also. There's a lot of issues if you go into St. Cloud State. For one thing, St. Cloud State library staff or the HR would do the job description. They would hire the person, and that person would be a union person, and the union person can't work with the board. And we're governed by a board. So there's problems there. Now, could we get around it? I don't know. But right now, it didn't seem possible to do that. We looked at Minitex. Minitex is our, through higher ed department at the University of Minnesota, and Minitex does all the delivery, the statewide delivery system. You know, you have individual delivery within your region, but also the statewide delivery is through Minitex. And Minitex does a lot of state training. The multi-types will bring school library media specialists and special librarians in, but Minitex is doing the training. So we thought that might be a good fit. Geographically, they're at the University of Minnesota. They're run by higher ed. It was going to be a stretch. So we don't know. I mean, it may still be an option, but I think it would really be a stretch for us to think about doing that. And then we started with a co-op called Resource Training Solutions, which is out in Sartell. You may, if you go by Sartell, you may see a big building that says Resource Training and Solutions along with St. Scholastica. We've been meeting with them. Karen and Carla and I met with them a couple weeks ago, and I met with the CEO today. And they train school people. They do a lot of training. He works with school administrators. We can't get into school administrators. I mean, they've got a way in the door. And so we're going to continue to see if there could be a way that we could contract with them, still maintain our board, maintain our budget, maintain the grants that we're giving away now with the idea of making good use of that taxpayer money that way. So we're going to continue to talk to them to see if that would work. And then the last option would be going back to East Central, and Carla's not opposed to this if we had to continue the way it is now. Hire somebody permanent. I need to be gone. I mean, I'm here and I'm going to stay, but I really am. They just hired me as an interim. And I am a library consultant across the country, so I do a lot of other library jobs besides this. And so hire a person there. They're doing the finances there and keep it right there at East Central. That may be our last looking at option. So those are kind of what we've looked at. We, you know, there's pluses and minuses to each of them. There's no perfect solution here, if there ever was. For years and years, CMLE was at the university. And it would make sense there because they are training school library media specialists. But is all those other conditions that happen when you enter a university administration. So,
questions, Tina?
What exactly is the $1 million for?
They're there to increase the number of school library media specialists within the state. So how I see that happening is certainly perhaps tuition reimbursement for people that may be thinking of a career that way, helping someone that's already in the program. It's very expensive. You know, I think there has to be some tails on the end of it, that if we help someone, that they'll stay in the state for a while and they won't get a job and leave, you know, some of that. But all of that needs to be worked out. But it is specifically for increasing school library media specialist.
Would it have to be used up in 1 year, you said?
No, they've extended that for a couple of years. Yeah, we were all panicked going, how in the world are we going to do this? Yeah, no.
Okay.
No. Yeah, for a couple of years. So, and that, it comes through the Department of Education. That's where state library services are housed. It's in the Department of Education, and they're working with us on what the next steps will be after we get the census, and after, which I'm sure you'll see, because it'll be very interesting, I think, to see who and what's out there. Yeah.
When do you expect the census to be done?
You know, they're starting it March, and I think it's going to go April, May, June, July, by the end of school, and then taking some months to find people that they haven't been able to connect with. And so I look for it in the fall. Yeah. And Counting Options is a company that was given the contract. And if any of you have had any experience, Counting Options is a very professional survey company. So we've been working with a person out of there who's a school library media specialist, helping her in each of our regions to get in. And they're going to be talking to business managers, because they're the ones that handle the money, talking to curriculum development people, as well as the school media specialist, if they are there.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Is there a requirement to have a school media specialist? Because some schools don't even have a library, designated library now.
I know.
And what about, is there a requirement for a school to have a school media specialist, or what is the leeway with that?
There's no oversight on that, and that's one of the issues here. There's no oversight. We have no school library media specialist within the department, the library department at the state level. They are looking to build that. There's a senator that is a school library media specialist, and she wants to get that move forward so they could hire someone, because there's no oversight. So what happens is, and I don't know if you remember this, but when the legislature ended last year, there was additional money going into every school district. Every school district within the state of Minnesota received either $15 a student or X amount of money, however that was, and with a specific request and demand that that go into libraries, that that goes into the resources for libraries and library staff. Now, there's no oversight. So we don't know. People receive that money, what we're going to hear about it. I think there's going to be some questions on our survey talking about that. But it was just automatically put into their amount for school library aid. So when you've got something like that with no oversight, it gets a pretty loosey-goosey, I think, you know, unfortunately. And there are libraries that have been built, or schools that have been built without libraries.
Yeah, we have one of them, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they get around that by doing different things in the classroom, but still, yeah, I don't know.
And these grants are open for not just necessarily for all librarians, but needs like bike racks and some other things.
Yeah.
What about lights? Like $38,000 worth of lights. Would that be a possible grant?
We gave a grant to a Friends of the Library to bring in an author. That's good. And another grant in Princeton to the library there. The Friends are bringing in plug-ins for phones and laptops. that kind of thing. It has to benefit a good number of people. And we're also bringing in a security person for East Central. We're bringing in an author, and he's coming this fall for an all-staff meeting to talk about security in their library buildings. They've had some bomb threats and different things there. I don't, have you had any?
Shootings at a parking lot.
Yeah, we had a shooting in a parking lot last week. Yeah.
So we give grants. Staff, start thinking.
Lee, do you have something to say back there?
I would think the ideal combination or the ideal option is the one with the most money and the least control. But it sounds like that would be a hard call. In addition, I would think, in broad brush terms, the private booksellers, you know, we have a couple in town, at least one really good, big one. Is there a role for them? I mean, I've never heard the topic broached, but does that merit exploration? I mean, you'd think we're trying to get the same thing. They're selling them. We're getting them out. At least plant the seeds with them. And maybe there's a way that what we do telescopes into their marketing. I don't know. But
I don't know.
I'm just thinking out loud here. I would think that... it'd be something we could cooperate on and not give away the farm.
Go for it.
Just really, want to say, you know? CMLE has a brand new website that we've updated, so really like you to take a look at that. We don't do podcasts anymore like we were doing. We are not doing the VR kits like we were doing. They're pretty much...
we're just giving money away.
Yeah, at this
quick
time.
Quick question. Do you give money to nonprofits if that is related to literacy and improving stuff or anything like that?
It has to be a nonprofit that would be directly connected to schools, teaching maybe English as a second language.
Okay.
You know, I don't know why we couldn't, you know, through community ed. As long as it's reaching the students or the public, whoever needs has the need for it. Historical societies, I've been contacting a few of those. History centers that might want to put on a display, bring an author in, do something like that.
And the grant form is right on CMLE's website.
Yeah, you
very
can fill it out. It's automatic.
Fill out.
Yeah. Religious affiliated nonprofits, would that work?
Mm-hmm.
Religious.
We do have a grant committee. So they meet and assess the grants, and we had a historical society that wanted a grant to keep the doors open. We can't do that. I mean, it has to be a program or a service to the community.
Well, I think you've done some parochial schools, haven't you? Like private schools?
Mm-hmm.
You've done some private school grants in the past.
Yeah. So it's out there.
I would add we also tried to eliminate it. Like, we asked the state if we could, like, just stop playing the game, and we were told we couldn't.
We can't.
So
no.
It's here.
It's here to stay.
It's here to stay. We're a state statute, and until they change that, we're here.
Yeah.
And $269 is not very much money, but we'll do what we can with it.
Oh, yeah.
Lee's been on the board. Zuri's been on the board.
Nice,
Jane's on the board now.
We're always looking for more. Lynn is on our board. She's our secretary. Mm-hmm. She's not here tonight, but we thank you, Melissa.
Sure. If any, you can certainly call me. I'm at Cambridge.
Very reachable.
And you can find my information on the website. I'll be glad to answer any questions you have or help you with anything. I know libraries, and we just have to make this work. We just have to make this work somehow, and we will. We'll just keep plowing ahead and... see what happens. Okay.
Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
So next we have on the agenda the strategic plan reports for the quarter objectives and key results.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Strategic plan reports.
So we didn't get a chance to rehearse this.
rehearse it.
So I did ask that some people share stuff, but I think we'll wait till the narrative part, unless there's stuff that people are chomping at the bit to talk about. All right. They did want you to get a chance to interact with our staff. We used to have the entire leadership team come to every board meeting. That practice stopped quite a few years ago, but that means you guys don't get to see our great leadership team members very often, and this is one of the rare instances we actually have five people here. So,
will this continue? Then every meeting we'll have a
we'll have some people, but we'll. I've asked everybody to attend at least two meetings, and if they have an action item, to be here. But you'll probably see Amy and Nicole more than you see everyone else, and probably Brianne too, because you tend to come for fundraising as well. So this is kind of the end of the year summary of Great River activities in your packet. What we'll do after today's meeting. Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Anybody
wants it? Is start taking this information and sharing it with our counties at our county board presentations. We tend to go to our county boards twice a year, once at the beginning of the year to talk about all the great things we did the year before, and then once after the budget's passed to talk about the budget. The big takeaways from 2023 is that we're continuing to see growth across the region, and particularly in Bower numbers. You can see on the first page, on page 3, that we had an increase in total borrowers by library in almost every location other than Swanville and Great Eagle. And that's pretty significant because we saw increases over the year before as well. That being said, we are still not at 2019 levels yet at each library, and some of the growth is in some locations more than others. So if you go to the next page, you can see the new borrowers by library and how that's trended over time since the pandemic, which is kind of how we're marking time now with statistics. You can see 2020, we only had 8,500 people sign up for new cards when we were mostly closed most of the year. And then the following year, when we were mostly reopened, we were at 13,000. But now we're starting to see that 18,000 and now 19,000 new borrowers. And why this is significant is the borrower total is a three-year statistic. And so it will take at least 3 years for us to see what normal looks like, because once you register for a card, it's good for 3 years. So if you come in one time and never come back, we don't know that for 3 years, not in a statistical way. So you can see that, like, St. Cloud is seeing some really strong growth, but as a percentage, St. Michael is continuing to outpace every library in the system. That being said, places like Buffalo and Elk River, which are some of our larger locations as well, saw some significant growth last year, and that's really what we need to see across the region. If our top five libraries are coming in strong, the region is coming in strong. And we've seen more growth in the smaller libraries, which is great, but it's been harder to move that number in the bigger locations. So last year, we finally started to see that progress, and it's exciting. The stats are always put in here on a monthly basis, but the most useful page is probably page 7 because it's the December picture. So you can see what it looked like at year end. And mind you, there were a lot of libraries up at the end of 2022. So if somebody's down right now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad thing. It's just they might have had some really strong growth last year. But when you look at just total numbers, for example, Swanville is up by 29%, but in sheer numbers, that's only about 1,000 items last year. So it's easier to move a small number than a big number. The big number to look at is St. Michael. 3% growth over what was a really strong previous year. They ended with 213,000 items, which is actually more than Elk River for the first time. Whether that will be true a second year in a row remains to be seen, because Elk River is starting to see things take off too. And they're doing a lot of cool stuff with the collection down there. Buffalo is as well. And so it'll be really interesting to see how the top three look outside of St. Cloud at the end of next year. The other huge area of growth was Overdrive, our digital library. We talked about this last meeting. 27% increase, and it just doesn't stop. So yeah, it was good that we were able to put additional dollars aside for that service, but the service is not like any other service. It's not something we own, but it is something that's in high demand and that patrons want. So we'll continue to need to balance that. The locker was down a little bit. That has more to do with the number of lockers than the number of people using it, because you can only get so many things in the lockers, and until people pick them up, you're at maximum capacity. You can have either 44 things or 44 times 5. You know, like, depends on how much people are actually using it. The next page is our key metrics. So our strategic plan has 4 strategic priority areas. Some of them have 1 goal, some of them have 2. Some of them have multiple objectives under goals. So each year we kind of tackle different areas to focus on. You can see we had some pretty strong increases in the digital circulation, that second one. Edge is an assessment put out by the Urban Libraries Council about public technology benchmarks. One of the things we aimed to do was offer more programs through partnerships, and I think Brandy will probably talk about that maybe later. I don't know. No? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe later. Teaser. So you can see, like, when we changed to going to fines free, we made some assumptions about what would happen with physical circulation. Physical circulation didn't actually increase, which was not what we expected. The number of items per checkout did not increase, which is also something we didn't expect, but it was partly because we had more people checking out, and so the predictions we had at the front end didn't really pan out the way we thought, but we are still seeing at least flat use of physical circulation, and in an environment when a third of our checkouts at one point were CDs and DVDs, I consider that a win, because the types of things people are able to check out have changed.
This does include electronic activity.
Yep. Okay. If you look under Expand eBook eAudio Database Collection, that's that second part. Okay. Digital library circulation has continued to increase. You can see the baseline from last year was 77,000 over the 3 months, okay, and it was 97,000. And then the number of people using it went from 20,000 to 25,000. Mm. So, yeah, we're still seeing pretty strong growth. And when you figure we have 95,000 active borrowers, if 25,000 of them are using the ebook collection, that's about a quarter of the people who have a card. So it's pretty significant.
And that's a growth.
Oh, yeah.
Trend.
Yeah. And it had flattened before the pandemic. So that was what was really interesting. Part of that had to do with where we were resourcing. Like, we started putting more dollars in the digital collection when we were closed. The more dollars that we put in, the more increase we're seeing. And then moving online in 2020 for a lot of people was, you know, they chose not to, and then they had to. And now that they're there, they've got a phone that can listen to audiobooks. They know how to do that. That wasn't something, the hurdle people had jumped over prior to 2020. And you can see some of the other metrics, like e-newsletter. We moved platforms last year, but we have a goal around library awareness and reaching more people, and we've been working really intentionally about that, and that's been very successful. Our open rate has increased to 45% on our e-newsletters, which was partly due to that platform shift. We did not have a formal presentation about DEI in the board meetings at the end of last year. We had done that in September and I think May, so did not have a marker at the end of 23. The next metrics are around giving and culture of philanthropy, so you can kind of see where those landed. And then I should have maybe pulled the increased training to support access and awareness, except I wanted to include all staff day. And you can see I failed to fix the formula at the end of that column. But we had 208 people at all staff day in October. And so they received training on things like de-escalation and a variety of other topics that I wasn't here for, due to personal situations. And then our financial investments are still coming in strong. The Finance Committee heard a full report about that. The next couple of pages are just a narrative of, like, the things you can't really measure. And so this is the part where I would be happy to turn this over to any staff members who want to share strategic plan highlights.
Brenda, you want to punt on that, as you called it?
Been punting all day.
It has been a punting kind of day. Yeah. Yes, it has been. Anyway, hi, everybody. Again, my name is Brandy Cantor. I'm Lead Patron Services Supervisor for Great River. Lots of words. It means I'm in charge of public service. Oops, sorry. For St. Cloud, Waite Park, some other central libraries, and then also I'm the Patron Services Supervisor who makes weird noises come out of here. I'm the one who is responsible for checking in. Are we following our strategic plan? Are we not? Where, you know, how do we do that? Kind of those strategic pieces of it as well, and kind of leading that charge. So a couple things then. I had planned to talk about program standards, which I'll get to as well, but just briefly about EDGE. Basically, EDGE is about kind of ways that we, the kinds of programs and services that the libraries can provide that help people in their communities to improve their understanding of technology, public health, civic engagement, those kinds of things. And so it's been a big learning curve, and there have been some really good successes through it. So a lot of our libraries tried doing, like, a program. You know, bring in a public health nurse to talk about a thing, to talk about something. And what we've discovered is sometimes that works, but a lot of times it doesn't. Like, when you survey the patrons and say, hey, would you like to have a program about public health issues relating to families post-COVID? They say, yes, that'd be awesome, but they don't show up. And so what we've discovered is that it works better to build collaborative services and programs with other agencies who are doing it. Number one, they can help advertise it. And number two, it might not be a program. It might be tabling in the library. It might be going together to a senior center or something like that. So it's kind of that exploration of how do we get really good, useful information out to the public in a way that meets them where they are and that they can get the best use of it, and we're kind of building that community strength. So we do ask our staff every month to tell us what kinds of EDGE programs are you doing, and also we ask for a sort of narrative information about, like, who did you collaborate with and what did you do. And it's really been those collaborative engagements where we're seeing kind of the biggest growth, I would say, and the best kind of return on investment. But it's been a surprising process. But definitely staff are looking into, like, tech help. So having someone there who can support and provide a little extra help to patrons, and our Book a Librarian is still very popular for that. And then also those collaborative projects with public health nurses. I'm blanking. TRICAP, Jeanette. Yeah, Jeanette's going to give you an example.
So the LSC and the Buffalo Library did a program called Teddy Bear Clinic. And she partnered with the Wright County Human Health and Services people with Greg Wise, who is the dentist at the health services. And he brought in a nurse, and they set up a place for kids. And they provided these little teddy bears that they handed out to each child that participated. And they took the teddy bear to the dentist and had their teeth cleaned, and they took the teddy bear to the nurse and got their shots, just as a way to introduce kids to those services and to make it not so scary. It was really a good success, and I think Katie's planning on doing it again. So that's just one example of a collaborative effort that met the EDGE.
All right. I knew I could count on you for a good example. Thanks. Any questions about EDGE stuff? Yelly.
If there would be an idea or a connection or a program that you could associate, say, with human services, that would be really creative. I don't have any ideas right now, but if you'd entertain the thought and make that connection, unique service and also unique opportunity. But Nothing comes to mind right now, but I'm just thinking of, what the term idle minds popped into my mind, and then that goes to social services. But you get the idea. If we could come up with something there, it'd be unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. It has been really exciting to see what kinds of collaborations come up, and there have been some with different human services departments. So like our project, our little lifeline here, would be a good example of that, where we're collaborating in St. Cloud to have just a little cabinet where there can be anything from hand warmers to non-perishable food items, mm-hmm. Tampons, diapers, all those kinds of things through donations, and that's very much a collaborative project as well. So it's really an interest. It's like, okay, I did say I've been here for 23 years. I love Great River. And one of the things I love most about Great River is just how much we are this big resource that we have. But each community is able to be so unique. I started with Great River as LSC in Royalton. And I would tell the kids, it's like I have a magic door at the back of my library that open this door and there's a million books. And they'd be like, oh, that's so amazing. But we really have that we have that ability to be very local focused and have this really large resource base of things that we can bring in. And so it's through those collaborations that I think we've been really able to capitalize on that, because like what Katie was able to do in Buffalo, that's really serving that local community in a very deep and real way. And we're able to capitalize on that regionally to try to build more kinds of collaborations. Sense. So, yeah. Any other questions?
Brandy, can I just ask, you had a couple of programs for seniors with disabilities or Alzheimer's. How well was that attended? And
those have been really well attended, again, because of the collaborations and working with assisted living facilities, or there's some organizations that work with the care providers, that provide support for the care providers of people with dementia or Alzheimer's. And so it's through those collaborations, again, that you get the people there, And so they do some really cool things with different, like, sensory bags and things like that. I think Sock Center has done that multiple times. And they've got a groove now. They get it, do it really well. So really quickly, the other big thing that we did that I'm super proud of is we did cross the finish line and provide program standards for our programs. And that was like a three-year project that finally we did that last year. It ended up with 2 years of VISTA support as well. And basically what we wanted to do is we wanted to get the best bang for the public's dollar. We wanted to have quality over quantity in our programming, especially for children and teens. And so we looked at, we want to have standards so that whatever library someone goes to for a children's program or a youth program, if someone says it was a Great River Regional Library program, they go, yeah, we know that was good. We know that was good. And so we used our logic model to try to really build on what are our goals. We used the strategic plan. We pulled from a couple of models called Reimagining School Readiness and Quality Matters Toolkits. If you want to know more, I can talk a lot because I'm super passionate about it. But the standards basically came down to warmly welcome all participants, and that's more than just saying hello. That's like really making an effort to engage with all participants, promoting active engagement with and between participants, so it's not lecture-like. It's like asking, hey, what do you think? What do you think would happen if we took the thingamabob and we stuck it in the doohickey? What's going to happen there? How are we going to explore this together? Building skills or providing a layer of learning, another key part. Giving encouragement more than praise. Using intentional planning and reflection. This is for staff to use that intentional planning and reflection to really design for inclusion and active learning, and to ensure that DEI is fundamental and incorporated within all of these. I'm super proud of us. It was a team lift hugely, regional and local staff. And so, yeah, that's another big thing we did. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brandy. That was more than a punt. Excellent report. Thank
you. This is how we punt at Great River.
Kind of after Karen's last name, I think it's kind of reflective. Right? So, anything, any further questions on that report and the quarterly objectives and key and the strategic plan progress? So now we're on to fundraising report. That would be Brianne. So go for it.
So in your packet, it includes both our 2023 year-end campaign finals, as that was from October through the end of January. We finished at $75,927, so not quite our $90,000 goal. However, as we've explained in the past, year-end campaign seems to be its own beast in and of itself. We have, for instance, over some years received gifts over $10,000 or $20,000, and that very strongly skews then our total. And so if that one person doesn't give the following year, for instance, it might not look as impressive. However, it is still a growth. And so one part that was also very exciting was we had an anonymous staff donor who challenged our staff to give up to $1,000. And we had strong staff participation in response to that challenge, which was really cool to have the challenge be amongst a peer member as well. And that surpassed the $1,000. I think it was about $1,600 that just our staff in and of itself raised. So that was definitely a success as well. And then looking into our year as a full scope, you will also see that our fundraising has grown. In particular, what has been exciting to see as a steady growth is our locally grown campaign. That is the local fundraiser that happens in March, so coming up here shortly, where 100% of the dollars stay local, and our branches select something that reflects their community interests and needs. That started about 6 years ago and has continued strong since. And then another big number that you will notice as well is our planned gifts. And that was something that I reflected at the end of our year last year with very large planned gifts that have come through, including one from Elk River that was supposed to be over a 20-year span that we got in a lump sum. So that also is something that you can't necessarily account for planned gifts, but as we continue to promote that as an option to our donors, we have continued to see growth in that area as well.
Questions for Brianne? Comments?
Yes.
Go ahead, Sarah.
So, you know, since we changed our status to a 501(c), the assumption was that grants and more options will be available. Obviously, that was in the middle of the year last year. Is that something looking forward to next year that we are anticipating that we may get a bigger chunk of that? Because, I mean, it's pretty dismal what we got right now.
Yes. So with grants, it is also a difficult effort as well. And so with our grants, although we have an additional 501(c)(3) status, we are still attempting or managing our grants very similar to our previous procedures besides that there are more options. Unfortunately, what this doesn't reflect as well is how many grants we applied for in the past year that we didn't receive, which was surprising how many we actually didn't. And so in that manner, we have really concentrated and focused on our donor relations and stewardship, and that is so much more guaranteed in building that relationship as opposed to grants that you completely compile your plan, your budget, your efforts, and then you might not even receive the grant. So hopefully we are able to apply for more and see better fruition in 2024.
Comments? Okay. Thank you, Brianne. And then next we have the Board of Trustees Bylaws Review. Oh, no, annual report. I'm sorry. Annual report, which is on the table, which Brianne had a lot to do with, I'm sure, putting this together.
Yes, so I had passed one out as well. You will also receive one in the mail. This is fresh off the press. The biggest thing in our annual report that we are highlighting is, again, with our partnerships from 2023, we worked with Georgie Page of the Page Foundation to bring Testify Americana from Slavery to Today as an exhibit. We also worked with EPIC to create the Experience Career Kits. And those were ginormous successful efforts as well. And then also highlighted is our SCSU survey that we completed that we had a very positive response to as well. So featured are both some narrative along with the year by numbers, and then you will also see reflected on the back most popular checkouts, which lots of patrons are also interested in learning, the top checkouts. And then we also had a record-breaking year for summer reading program as well, with reaching 12,373.
Good. Any questions on this?
I can't believe Diary of a Wimpy Kid made into the most checked out one of the books.
It's been popular for a long time.
I was actually waiting for one of the ones we were talking about a lot last year to show up on here just because of just a general interest.
Just gonna scrap that.
I was grateful that did not happen.
Yes. We all know what Karen's talking about there, I believe. All right. So next we have the Board of Trustees Bylaws Review, which we only do how often?
We do it every year, okay. But it hasn't been changed much over the last couple of years. Some of the more recent additions was the addition of the fundraising or the Fund Development Committee being formalized in the bylaws last year after we received the 501c3 status. There were some board members that asked some questions about the public forum last year, or last meeting. So I wanted to point out where that appears in the bylaws. It's on page 22 of your packet. It says page 4 of 7, number 22. The only place that the public open forum actually appears in policy or anything for Great River is here in the bylaws, where it shows the order of the meeting and just that it exists. And so when you get your packet on the agenda, there's some rules about how the public forum is supposed to work. Those rules were put in place by board action in 2009 and have always said the same thing, but it's not actually in the bylaws. So there's no requirement that we have a public forum. There's no requirement that it looks the way that it does right now. And I just wanted to point out, if you wanted to change it, because that was what I was being asked last month, this would be the place where you would change it. If we were going to make a change, I would take the information today, and then we would present it for action in March, if that's something the board wants to change. Or if there's another part of the bylaws that you would want changed, we would take the information, and then it would be formally put in front of the board for action in March.
So any comments on that? People like open forum. We don't have to have the open forum, but we are kind of based on First Amendment that we want to hear everybody what they have to say. We do have limits on how long they can talk. Mm-hmm. I think the person that was very interested in that is not here tonight to speak on that. It's how it always works.
Yeah, it is.
That's how
it's pretty standard, though. To have them.
So yeah. I have a question, Madam Chair. When we have the open forum and the process of the open forum is set up as such that the board does not have to comment on anything that is said in the open forum, I think to the person who's in the open forum, if they are passionate enough to come and talk about something at a Great River Regional Library meeting, it's something that they want some kind of an answer or an explanation for. So I understand that it's a forum to express yourself, but doesn't it breed more frustration rather than having some satisfaction? Because you're just saying people are sitting with expressionless faces, nobody's going to remark on it, nothing will be said about it, it's just documented. So that's just my perception of open forum. I mean, I'm not saying we should take it away. I'm not saying we should leave it. I'm just expressing how it feels because I've spoken at open forums. And I've been very passionate when I've come and when I was not on the board. And it's a very frustrating feeling to come and speak about something you're really passionate about that you want the library to do something about and then just to have these blank faces and moving on to the next item agenda. It's almost like a slap in the face, to be honest.
I don't know. It's important for all boards to appreciate, no matter how well intentioned they might be, there's people who disagree with them. I think that has merit. And when folks, regardless of the boards that I'm in, when folks come in and express a perspective that isn't widely held by that board, it's still important for that board to realize there's folks out there that think that way. And I think that accomplishes something. And it does. It may not impact the immediate issue you're talking about, but it stays in the back of your mind and impacts subsequent decisions. The idea that you're going to show up, just for example, a rural electric board, and express an opinion on, let's say, tree cutting, and you think they're doing a lousy job, you can bet there's board members that heard that. And it may not happen right after the meeting, but it happens down the line. That's just one, a small example. But, it might be accomplishing more than you think.
I'll add to, though, I think there has been follow-up that has happened after public comments by staff that I think has been important and maybe not as obvious as we're sitting around the table, but I know how you feel. But it's hard to speak when, as a board, should we be responding or should we wait and formulate a response at another time when there's a consensus or... You know, I think there's some things to be considered as well so that we're answering accurately and kind of fully as a board or as a staff. It's kind of a balance.
Zuri, I'll add to that. Whether it's a city, county, township, if I was bringing a planned unit development to the table and the neighbors were upset about it, might not have been addressed at that meeting, but I would go meet with them that there was a problem. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't get local support with it. So it's a good sounding board, and it's whatever the board wants to do with it afterwards.
Do you think we should maybe have a standard, usually the chair, like Ed would say, thank you for your comments or thank you for coming to speak, and then we will take it, back to the board. We can't respond back to them, obviously, but have just some kind of a coin phrase to say back to them.
I think so.
Just to thank them, give them.
I think so. At the end or beginning of the open forum, that we can't formally kind of remark on anything.
Kind of explain it, kind of a disclaimer kind of thing.
But whatever you have said, the board will take under advisement and consider in the future decisions of whatever. It's a general phrase, but it does go some ways in kind of giving somebody a specific response.
Maybe
sometimes the stuff we bring, that people bring to us, we never thought of before.
Mm-hmm. It's good for us to know. I'm not saying we should take it away. I'm just saying we could acknowledge what is said in a better way than what we are doing without really taking any action on it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Wise words.
Well, thank you. Doesn't go far enough.
Bobby, did you have something to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I think those are wise words to say something that, you know, we're willing to take this under consideration. We will consider it. Thank you for coming.
Okay. But, maybe open that with a comment. Can Breanne write us something like that?
Standard response.
Yeah. Or just opening, you know, we're going to have open forum. We have 3 minutes or 2 minutes per person, up to 10. We can't respond back to you, but we do thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Or
if we like it, we give them three.
Usually we do give them three because we can't pull the mic away from them. But we're just, you know, our open forums have been quite enlightening the last couple of meetings, and our new people maybe got really initiated that last meeting.
Well, to the general point, it does require a certain amount of fortitude to come forth before a body like this, maybe, you know, only two or three people in the group, and share your perspective.
And I like the idea of blank faces, you know, make sure we're looking at them when they're speaking and maybe not look like JC there with
that's only the one in this room.
you know, at least look at them when they speak instead of keeping our heads down, and because maybe we don't agree with them or maybe we do. So maybe Breanne can create something magical there on that.
No pressure.
Punt. Brandy's statement. So, Karen, what are you looking for? Just any other comments?
If you have changes, we can bring them forward. That was the only thing that anyone had raised with me with the bylaws, so it felt like I needed to bring it up.
I don't see anybody coming directly forward about changing that or getting rid of it.
If we look at it again, email it to you?
Yeah, we could certainly bring it forward as a proposal. March packet materials will be put together the first week in March.
Okay.
And we'll look at it again in a year. Yeah. So,
okay. Yep. Lee,
nice
are
job.
You trying to?
Yeah.
That one. Yeah,
Karen,
there you go.
Karen and Jane, on committees, should there be the collection development?
That was an ad hoc committee.
Okay.
Yeah, so that wouldn't exist anymore under current policy unless it's reactive, like the board would take action to form the committee.
Yeah, okay.
So
we're just going to
leave
it as a
Okay.
We might need safety committee again one of these days.
Yeah. That would be an ad hoc, too. That's how that one functioned.
Before.
And actually, Fund Development did for many years as an ad hoc committee appointment of the board. Yep. So it'd be covered under Section 2, Special Committees for the Study and Investigation of Special Problems may be appointed by the President. That's
okay.
Where those committees have fallen.
Okay.
You have the power.
I think we'll wait on that for a little bit. But it's good for us to think about it.
Yeah.
Still.
And the collection process is formalized in policy, so it would make sense that that is addressed by the policy versus being incorporated into the bylaws, to me.
Okay.
Lee?
If you need victims to volunteer to do another legislative visit, you know, I'd be willing to.
That's Monday.
Okay, Monday.
I don't know.
Are
what,
you going Monday?
I don't know what appointments we have yet. I plan
only
to.
Yeah.
Send me an email.
We have three?
Only three.
Okay. We don't have as many places to go as last year.
You'll be quicker?
Maybe.
Okay. Any further discussion on the bylaws? And we'll just, that's it for our agenda, right?
That's it.
All right. Any closing thoughts? Meeting next month, of course.
19th.
We'll probably have finance, personnel, and full board on the 19th.
I'm going to ask to be requested to be allowed to not be at the next meeting. The timing for the next meeting is just when we break our fast in Ramadan. It's exactly 5:50 when we break our fast, so I'm just not going to be there.
I think that would make note of that. I think we'd still probably have quorum.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you for letting us know. Other than that, wise, we will adjourn. Adjourn. at 6:05 or 7:07.